It is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur, of course, joins us every Monday morning at this time, and we say, good May morning.
Oh, good May morning. I'm happy it's a good May morning up there. It's a beautiful May morning here in Brooklyn, as the Sicilians like to say. In Sicily, by the way, everybody has, of course, a relative in Brooklyn. So you tell people you're from Brooklyn, and they want to know, have you been to their cousin Dino's pizzeria? But this is all, I'm not joking.
We actually had, I actually had something like that happen up here a long, long time ago, where some friends from Ireland came. And it was just totally random, and they found out that the daughter of the person down the street essentially was, oh, they were working in Twin Lakes. Well, how far is that from here? Not very far. Oh, and then, you know, it started a whole thing that, as you can imagine.
So I had a very eventful food week, and I want to start with the publisher, the new publisher, Macmillan. It's actually an imprint of Macmillan. Has finally gotten my Cooking in a Small Kitchen printed. So I actually have a copy in my hand as we speak. And I didn't know anything about what this was going to look like, except they sent me the cover a while ago to say, oh, don't you love this cover? And, well, truthfully, I didn't. But I wasn't going to say that. But now that I have the book, I love the cover. You don't, in a photograph, you can't get the conceit of the cover, which is that the title of the book, Cooking in a Small Kitchen, forward by Lydia Bastianich. She wrote a new foreword to the book, which was originally published nearly 40 years ago. Now, my mother used to say, when I turned 40, my mother used to say, I don't mind being my age, I just mind you being your age. And you know what? I mind that this book is 40 years old, because that really makes me feel old. And it was, I remember I had to hand in the manuscript on the day that my sister was due to give birth to her first child, my nephew Brian, who's now turning 40. So I am going to use that line on him, but I have already, so it's not going to be a surprise. In any case, the book looks great. What it is a photographic copy of the original book. So inside, it looks identical. And, you know, but this isn't about the author. There was nothing to say about me back 40 years ago. There's a list of my books, of which this was the first, so there was nothing there years ago. And then there's this nice foreword by Lydia Bastianich. So I've decided to be proud of this book, Cooking in a Small Kitchen. I wrote it when I was living in Greenwich Village, in a kitchen, a new for 19, maybe 35, 40, kitchen, so I liked the vintage aspect of my kitchen. It was in an 1827 townhouse just south of Greenwich Village, and it was heaven, and it wasn't all that small, now I know. Then I thought it was small. I got this apartment with this kitchen in mind through a friend of James Beard. I was friends with James Beard. So can I reminisce a little bit? I'm old.
Absolutely.
Now.
I you like don't even have to ask. You don't even have to ask when you're old.
You don't have to ask?
No, you just start.
Well, anyway, yeah, let me just go back a little bit. When I started working at Newsday in 1969, one of the first things I had to figure out how to do was meet James Beard, who was, of course, my idol. I'm not sure if it was 71 or 72, his huge and revolutionary American cookbook came out. I say revolutionary because everybody took James Beard seriously, and he was really the first person in food public view who was taking American food seriously. Early 70s, so what?
50.
Don't ask.
Okay.
So I got myself I was Newsday was strictly a Long Island newspaper, as it still is today, and I managed though to figure out a way to get to meet James Beard, and we, you know, he liked young men, so we became friendly, and then friendlier, and you know, I think by the time he passed away, he would have considered me in his top 20 of the young men around him. Although I didn't hang out there, there were some people, I'm not going to name names, who were in public food people, who did who were sycophants. I was never a sycophant. I was too busy trying to make a career for myself, and he was very helpful, and he helped me get this apartment. It wasn't even listed at the time, but it was the real estate broker was a friend of his from Greenwich Village. And it was their mutual friend, Isadora Bennett, who owned this house. And Isadora was in her 80s and pretty infirm at that time. Isadora was a character unto herself. She was the publicist for Agnes DeMille and Martha Graham. And you could say that Isadora sort of created the modern dance movement. I mean, it was all through her clever manipulation of the press. And when I got the apartment, she gave me the apartment because I was a journalist, and I used some off-color word in my little interview with her, and she said, oh, don't worry about that. I don't. There's no sentence worth a damn without a damn in it. Huh. I'll never forget that line. Anyway, so, small kitchen. So that was my kitchen was carved out of the second floor of this old townhouse, and it actually you could enter the bathroom through the kitchen or through the hallway. Very interesting setup, right? And I decided that I'd have to close off the door to the bathroom if I wanted to get any kind of space in this kitchen. And I could not live, and I still could not live, without a dishwasher. So I decided to get a portable dishwasher, a dishwasher on wheels, with a butcher block top. And I put that in front of the door to the bathroom, which also blocked the sink. But you had to hook up the dishwasher to the sink at some point anyway. So anyway, I manipulating this space, it was okay, and I learned I could really cook pretty much anything I wanted. But what the book does, and I've forgotten all this, but a friend of mine who lives in Philadelphia and sold her house a few years ago and moved into a small apartment in Center City, I gave her the book, and she said, oh, what was best about the book was that it taught me how to organize myself in a small kitchen, and that all the recipes are the instructions are around the small kitchen. And then my friend Andy, woman Andy, who used to be an editor at the New York Times, now retired, and who in her retirement is struggling to cook more because she never did cook. Her husband cooks, but he's sort of, you know, you get to a certain age and you decide, I've had enough of this. And I'm not me, but anyway, you know, people who aren't possessed. Anyway, so she was sitting in my kitchen the other day looking through the book, just arrived. It's not in the stores yet, but you can pre-order on Amazon, Cooking in a Small Kitchen. And she said, oh, I could make a lot of these things. They're so simple. I said, well, there's some hard ones in here too. Not hard, but time-consuming ones. But yeah, that's the way I cook, and I guess that's the way I was cooking 40 years ago. I'm always out for the easy way out, even though I could cook things for hours. The other day I made something, I think I mentioned it last week, that took hours because I had to make sauce for it. I had to make two sauces. You know, it was a baked pasta. Anyway, and it keeps me busy.
Yes, good.
And so I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. I had to buy a new little Cuisinart mini prep. My old one started literally falling apart. I was afraid that the blade was going to whiz off one day and hurt me. So I bought a new one. They're not very expensive, $35, $36 maybe. And I was just about to throw away the instruction book, because who needs instructions? I'm a guy, and I never read instructions anyway, even when I do need them. But I decided to look through this instruction book and say, maybe there's something in here that I don't know. You know? And what I didn't know was that there were recipes at the back of the instruction book, and they looked pretty good. And one that caught my eye was something called Asian marinade. And I'm always looking to flesh out my Asian repertoire, which is consists of maybe three dishes at this point, meaning something I like to make and something that's easy to make and I'd make on any day of the week kind of thing. I guess my chief one that I now have been making for at least a year is scrambled eggs with scallions in a gingery tomato sauce. Very good. You can find that, I guess, from, what's his name? I'll think of it. Francis Lamb from the New York Times. I think it was his last column before he left to go on the radio. He's on NPR now. And this is a dish from his childhood. He said it was always a great excuse for a lot of rice. You don't need a lot of rice, but you got to have rice with that. In any case, this Asian marinade, I'll tell you what it is in a sec, has cooking suggestion. And the main cooking suggestion was to use this Asian marinade, and some of it is an actual sauce, on a pork tenderloin. This is not a cut that I make. Maybe 20 years ago or 30 years ago, I fooled around with pork tenderloins, and I decided that they're boring. It's just like a beef tenderloin. It's a very, very tender cut of meat. However, it has very little flavor of its own. So putting it in a marinade appealed to me. And it's a very lean cut of meat. So if you're, you know, interested in lean protein, pork tenderloin is the way to go. By the way, I go to the supermarket to buy this, which I see in the case all the time, and I can only find flavored pork tenderloins. They come in vacuum packages with their marinade already in the package. I'm not buying this, but there you go. I think the general public finds this as boring as I do, so now they're marketing them. I forget what company, Hormel or whomever, is marketing them with like a lemon pepper marinade and an Asian marinade, of course, a barbecue marinade or something like that. So I'm looking all over for it, and I go. The butcher happens, it's in a regular supermarket. The butcher happens to be standing outside filling up the case. I ask him, don't you have any pork tenderloins without flavoring, just plain old pork tenderloin? And he found them for me. He said, but they go much quick. This was interesting. He said, they go much quicker than the ones with the flavoring. And he told whoever, another guy who must do the ordering, the next time, don't get so many of these flavored ones. All right, here's the flavoring I used. And I whizzed it up in my little mini prep. So I'll give you the mini prep instructions. The recipe calls for 3/4 ounce of peeled fresh ginger root cut into 1/2-inch pieces. I followed this direction, but I'm telling you, it's overly precise. If you put in one ounce, you would be okay. Even 1.5 ounces, and it might be a little more gingery, but that would be okay too. So I would say, depending on the thickness of your ginger root, about a 2-inch length of ginger root, and peel it. And then cut it into chunks. And put that in your mini prep along with 2 cloves of garlic. Don't worry, it's not going to be garlicky. It's a very well-balanced marinade, and there's a lot more to come. So you pulse those. It says 5 times. I don't know if I did 5 times, but you pulse it until it's pretty fine, okay? And then scrape down the bowl, because then it's going to fly onto the side of the bowl. And add the remaining ingredients, which are 1/2 cup of low-sodium soy sauce, 1/3 cup, you're taking this down because it's really good, 1/2 cup of low-sodium soy sauce, 1/3 cup of, well, they say canola oil, but any neutral vegetable oil that you happen to use. I happen to use canola. 1/4 cup of hoisin sauce, And if you don't want to go out and buy hoisin sauce, and you have to buy a whole jar of this for a quarter of a cup, and you know, maybe you'll never make it again, you could try it with, in the old days we used to say ketchup was a substitute for hoisin sauce. It's not, but you could use a quarter of a cup of ketchup. A quarter of a cup of Asian sesame oil. This is an essential ingredient, toasted sesame oil. I keep it in the house. By the way, I had all these ingredients in the house, so I didn't have to buy anything. And I don't have much of a Asian pantry, by the way. These are essentials. They were wise at Cuisinart to just do it with these ingredients. A quarter of a cup of toasted sesame oil, also known as Asian sesame oil, which has a very particular aroma. And by the way, don't buy big bottles. If you go to a Chinese grocery, they sell these enormous bottles because it's used sparingly. And it does last a long time. I mean, it has more of a shelf life than most oil, but I still wouldn't buy more than a pint at a time. A quarter of a cup of rice wine vinegar. And if you have everything else and you're not going out to buy ingredients, you can use a white vinegar, even white distilled vinegar or white wine vinegar. I wouldn't use a colored vinegar, although, you know, there's color in this, so what's the difference? And then I left out the hot pepper, but the recipe calls for, I thought, quite a lot of half teaspoon of cayenne pepper. If you don't like things very hot, I would reduce that to a quarter of a teaspoon, or don't put any in at all, and then add some after you've tasted it, because it's already fairly sharp flavored. So that's it. You whirl it all together. They tell you you can put it in a container and refrigerate it, and I don't know, it keeps for a while. But I used it the same day, and it makes about a cup and two-thirds, cup and a half of marinade. And you only have to use, I made 2 1-pound, these tenderloins weigh about a pound. I would go for a bigger one rather than a smaller one. I found the bigger one, I cooked the big one and a small one together, and the bigger one, of course, was a little rarer, and I liked it better. So I would say, you know, if it's a tiny bit over a pound, it's better than just under a pound or a pound. And I marinated it in a plastic bag, two of them, with about a cup of the marinade, which well covers them in a plastic bag. And I turned the bag a couple of times. You know, for safety's sake, you might want to do this in the refrigerator, but I live daringly. I live dangerously, I should say. And I marinated it at room temperature. And it was great. And the rest of the sauce you use as a sauce on the meat, or as a dipping sauce, or just to try it out, I had this nice soft focaccia, and I made a little sandwich with it, with the dipping sauce as the moistening for the bread.
Okay, so now unfortunately, what you have to tell people is, did you cook the extra sauce?
No, you have to throw out the sauce that you marinated it in. It's, you know, you contaminated it with the meat.
But now, you have to say that.
You just fetch the meat out of the bag, put it on a rack. I didn't give you the baking temperature. This was essential, I thought, and it worked perfectly. 475 degrees. You put the meat on a rack on a pan. I used my all-purpose, everyday, looks like hell, but works great, sheet pan. With a little edge on it, and I have a rack that fits in there. And you put the two on the rack, and you roast them at 475 for 25 minutes. I did that exactly, 25 minutes. And the meat came out perfect. The narrow end is going to be a little bit more done than the thicker center and other end part. It's a tapered cut of meat, like a filet mignon is. So you will get a little variation in doneness, and some people don't want it to be pink in the middle, but I do. You let it rest for 10 minutes when it comes out of the oven. Now, for two of us, two of these was twice as much as we needed. One of these actually feed more than two, could go for three. I wouldn't know about stretching it to four. But anyway, I had an extra one. I refrigerated it once it cooled down, and yesterday it was delicious. Yeah. Cold.
I
sliced
actually
very thin.
Actually, this weekend or
maybe better. By the way.
Yeah. Because I'm not a big pork tenderloin fan because it's not fatty enough. But there was some, and it was done Asianly, not quite your way. And I have to tell you, it was so tender and so good cold. And the marinade was excellent, and it had just infused it. So that was big
so,
plus.
You know, I'm thinking it's a good cut of meat for sandwiches in general. And I'm into sandwiches lately, mainly because there's this fabulous sandwich place in the neighborhood. I'm working my way through the menu. It's called Stockt, Stocked. Very sadly, but not tragically, they had a big fire 2 years ago, and the place was closed for over a year while they rebuilt it. And they rebuilt it to look just like it was, except maybe better. And one thing is better. They have nice tables now that are made from the wood that got burned in the fire. So you know how people are now burning wood for the look of it? Well, this is the real deal. These were holding up the place in the basement. They got burned. Anyway, Stock makes great sandwiches. They have a nice garden. It's in a neighborhood not called Park Slope, but called Prospect Heights, and it's on Vanderbilt Avenue, which is the main thoroughfare of now trendy Prospect Heights, with multi-million-dollar condominiums being built up in what's now called Pacific Park. See, Brooklyn is changing daily. I want to move on to risotto. Okay. I think I'm going to get off of Brooklyn.
How are you?
Think
can you do risotto
I keep thinking
in
there's
3 minutes?
More interest in Brooklyn than there really is. In 4 minutes, I can tell you.
Okay.
If anybody out there who makes, first of all, let me say asparagus is great in risotto. And if you look up recipes for asparagus risotto, and there are many online as well as the one that I made forever in Marcella Hazan's first cookbook, you will see that the instructions all tell you to pre-cook the asparagus. But I'm thinking, why pre-cook the asparagus? Because the rice cooks even longer than the asparagus needs to cook. So I cut them on a sharp angle to expose as much of the interior of the asparagus as possible. I cut them into one-inch pieces. I saved the tips to add at a second moment. And after about, when there was, let's say this, risotto, if you're cooking it at the right bubbly, it should take 18 to 20 minutes. I timed myself again yesterday when I made this, and yes, indeed, it was 18. Actually, it was 19 minutes. It was exactly in between when I took it off the stove. So what I did was I added the asparagus, all cleaned and cut up. When I had about 12 minutes left to cooking, meaning after about 6 minutes, I put the asparagus in, 7 minutes, 8 minutes, in there. Depends on the asparagus, because if they're very thin asparagus, they're going to cook quickly, so put them in later. But mine were medium, thickish asparagus, and so I put them in, I gave them a good long time. Because, of course, once you add the asparagus, the risotto is going to slow down, the cooking is going to slow down. I would say I was nervous at the end here that the asparagus were not going to get as tender as I wanted them, though I don't like mushy asparagus, at the same time as the rice, but it worked out great. I guess I added the tips when there was still about 5 minutes left of the cooking, and that they get tender quicker than the stems do. I didn't peel the stems. I just broke off the bottoms, as I always do. I must say, it was really great, and I did this with water as the liquid because my friends who were here are vegetarian. I forgot that. I can't use chicken broth. I can't use beef broth. I have beautiful homemade beef broth. I wouldn't use that with asparagus necessarily, but I would have made vegetable broth had I thought of it. And you need some kind of flavor. I ended up adding a big lump of butter at the end, which, of course, makes everything more delicious. and quite a lot of Parmigiano. So asparagus with rice, and even if you have boiled rice with asparagus and Parmigiano, it's a good thing. I've done that. No risotto, just boil up your rice, butter.
Parmesan, make your rice and then quick throw it in an oven, stick it
so
in the oven.
I thought the asparagus were going to give it more flavor than they did, even though they were really good asparagus from New Jersey. In the Marcella method, I might have gotten a little bit more flavor. What she has you do is blanch the asparagus for 4 or 5 minutes, depending on the thickness of the asparagus, which normally we get 8 or 9 minutes for a full boil. And then she uses the liquid, the water, resulting from the cooking of the asparagus as part of the liquid for the risotto.
All right, and everybody's pre-ordering.
Usually in Cornwall, the trees, we always say, leaf out on Mother's Day.
Well, we're
that's
leafing.
Coming up.
We're leafing.
You're beginning to leaf.
Yeah, we are. But I just want to add, cooking in a small kitchen, which, P.S., now everybody's got really small kitchens. A lot of people have really small kitchens, so
it doesn't matter if you have a small kitchen or not.
They're good.
It's a very eclectic. My friend Joel, who was here hanging out yesterday, looking through it, said, you were really ahead of your time. I mean, you were making hummus more than 40 years ago. Now, you go to the supermarket, there's a whole case full of hummus. Mm. No, there are a lot of recipes in there. And then people can say, I know that. Well, 40 years ago, nobody knew that.
It's good.
Truthfully.
All right.
I think the first recipe in English for carpaccio, raw beef on a plate. If you have a small kitchen, it's a great thing to see serve.
All right.
All right. Take care, kids.
Have a good weekend.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robinhood Radio. Of course, you can hear Arthur live every Monday morning, and you can also hear him rebroadcast and on our on-demand page. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, from Hathaway Young, located on South Center Street in Millerton. Flawless catering and event planning, hathawayyoung.com. John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. In Hillsdale, New York, Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. From a fresh cup of great coffee to healthy, delicious breakfast, or sit down with a dinner with a tasty, life-enhancing meal that you can take home. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.